You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
A few years ago, after a Bible study comparing the Gospels, someone said to me, "I am so relieved to know that I'm not crazy. Every Easter, when the story was different, and I thought it was me. I thought I just had a really bad memory." Nope. Year to year, depending on which gospel is read, you get a whole different order of events, a different cast of characters, and a different point. Two angels. No, wait, one. No, the three women. Nope. Just Mary Magdalene. Jesus putzing around in the garden. No, he's not here. He's already back in Galilee fixing breakfast. But of all the Easter stories, this particular passage doesn't get as much attention on Easter as the others. Even though Mark is the earliest gospel and closest to the real action, the ending is just kind of abrupt. If we only had the Gospel of Mark, and considering what Easter has become, I dare say most folks just wouldn't be satisfied. So let's join the story already in progress and see what Mark's up to.
Our words of wisdom are from Mark, chapter 16, verses 1 through 8, the Message version.
When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so they could embalm him. Very early on Sunday morning, as the sun rose, they went to the tomb. They worried out loud to each other.
"Who will roll back the stone from the tomb for us?"
Then they looked up, saw that it had been rolled back. It was a huge stone, and walked right in. They saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed all in white. They were completely taken aback, astonished. He said,
"Don't be afraid. I know you're looking for Jesus, the Nazarene, the one they nailed on the cross. He's been raised up. He's here no longer. You can see for yourselves that the place is empty. Now, on your way, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going on ahead of you to Galilee. You'll see him there, exactly as he said."
They got out as fast as they could, beside themselves, their heads swimming, stunned. They said nothing to anyone.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Three men were visiting with one another after a friend's funeral and reflecting on all the nice things said about him during the eulogy. Inevitably, one of them broached the subject of what they'd want people to say about them at their funeral. The first one said, "I'd want people to say I was a great doctor who helped many people." The second said, "I'd want people to say I was an inspiring teacher who changed lives." The third one said, "I'd want people to say, look, I think he's moving." In Mark's version of Easter morning, Mary, Mary, and Salome go out to the tomb, and as you might suspect, the lunkheads were nowhere to be found. They'd all run away when Jesus was arrested. But the women who followed Jesus right from the beginning followed him clear to the end. And now that it's after the Sabbath, it was time to prepare the body for burial. At the crack of dawn, the first possible moment to perform this act of tenderness and kindness for the one they loved, they approached the tomb. But even at this impossibly early hour, the stone had already been moved. Someone has been there before them, and they're frightened. As they enter, a young man dressed in white reassures them, telling them the one that they're looking for isn't here. He's been raised up. Go and tell the others. Then Mark says, they got out as fast as they could, beside themselves, their heads swimming, stunned, they said nothing to anyone. The end. That's it. No resurrection appearances, no disciples shouting, "He is risen," no choirs, no flowers, fear and silence. Happy Easter! Now, you can be excused for thinking, hey, what kind of ending is that? That's not a proper ending. The end is missing. A proper ending has Jesus appearing to witnesses. In fact, more than a few witnesses, because you got to have witnesses to this kind of thing. And while you're at it, Jesus should do some amazing things, like walk through a closed door or a wall would be even better. Then at the end, have the disciples come together for a glorious farewell as Jesus ascends into heaven on a cloud. Now that's an ending. That's what you would expect. And that's what you get in the other three Gospels. And in fact, your Bible does have a number of extra verses after our passage today, but they were clearly added on later by well-meaning followers who didn't get what Mark was up to, and added on an appearance to Mary Magdalene, the guys from Emmaus, and Jesus preached a winding sermon before being beamed up to heaven. But no, the original ending of Mark is what we just read. And I think Mark ends it the way he does, tentatively, because he's on to something. You know what you do with a satisfying ending? You close the book. A proper ending gives a story closure. Conflict is resolved, good triumphs over evil, and all is right with the world. Story's over, so we can close the book. But Mark doesn't have that ending, because Mark knows all is not right with the world. So Mark's ending is not an ending. It's a cliffhanger. Mark has left it unresolved, with the idea that if you're a follower worth your salt, you'll look at one another and ask, what is wrong with those disciples? And be compelled to jump up yourself and give this story a proper ending with your life. And if Mark were writing today, I think he'd still end it the same way, unfinished, because the world is still not right. And the question is still the same. Who is going to finish the story? 58 years ago yesterday, Martin Luther King Jr. was headed out for dinner and stepped onto the balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis. There he was shot and killed by James Earl Ray. King had traveled to Memphis to support striking sanitation workers and had spoken at a rally the night before. It was uncanny. It seemed as though he'd had a premonition that he was not long for this world, a feeling I've got to think Jesus shared in his last days.
Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now. Because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
He was gone the next day. Following MLK's assassination, the outpouring of anger and disappointment set many cities on fire. But he had charged his followers with getting to the promised land. And guess what? Many felt compelled to jump up and carry on with their own lives. And the work continues today. MLK's followers managed to come together and figure out a way to move ahead without the one who had inspired them being physically present with them. And isn't that where we are today? A number of years ago, as we worked to develop a new mission statement, brand promise, and logo for the Fountains, one thing became abundantly clear: how a call to action is built into the DNA of the Fountains. It ended up as a part of our mission statement. It's not enough to just believe. We take action. And I think that sentiment resonates with lots of people, now more than ever, especially in a time when Christianity is being misrepresented and used in ways that have very little to do with Jesus. Our government is busy wrapping the cross in the flag, talks about power more than compassion, and seems far more interested in controlling people than loving them. It pains me to say it, but the greatest threat to Christianity in America today is not atheists or immigrants or transgender people or people of other religions. The greatest threat to Christianity in America is Christians. Christians who have forgotten what Jesus actually taught. What many of us see portrayed as Christianity and what we understand as following Jesus are two very different things. One is about loving your neighbor. The other is about hate, full stop. One is about humility and compassion. The other is about cruelty and power. One is about holding on to one's integrity, even in the face of death. The other is about a no-holds-barred pursuit of a golden throne. And for us, or anyone else who wants to be taken seriously as followers of Jesus, now is not the time to run away and say nothing to anyone. We need to be in the thick of things. That's what Jesus wanted us to do. It's not enough to just believe. We take action. It's been attributed to everyone from St. Augustine to Ignatius to Martin Luther King. But whoever first said it captures the spirit of what I'm trying to get at. Pray as though everything depended on God. Work as though everything depended on you. Take action. And I don't know if you've noticed, but we're not living in normal times. And to whatever degree there is a future, generations yet to come will look back at us and wonder, were they even paying attention? And if you're a disciple worth your salt, you may want your descendants to be able to look back with confidence and know that you didn't just stand idly by. You took action. What really happened that first Easter 2,000 years ago? No matter what people tell you, we can never really know. The Gospels certainly don't know. But in Mark, we have the story of a man in white telling the women, Jesus is going before you. Meet him back in Galilee. In other words, where it all started, in your homes, in your work, in your everyday lives. As one novelist has a Roman centurion say of the Easter event, I have no idea what happened, but this man Jesus and his ideas are let loose in the world. will not likely disappear. The evidence is that Jesus did indeed come alive after Easter in the hearts of those who loved him, in the minds of those who had understood his message, and in the actions of those who were ready to live it out in the tough, real world. In the end, the resurrection is not about God upending the natural order of things to reanimate a dead body. The resurrection is about the followers of Jesus refusing to give up on the notion that we are called to upend the natural order of things by taking action, by putting love first in the world. As my mentor Bill Nelson said, never wonder whether Jesus is risen. Never suppose Jesus is not alive. Ask rather, is something of Jesus' presence alive in me? The night Martin Luther King was assassinated, Robert F. Kennedy arrived in a poor African-American neighborhood of Indianapolis for what was supposed to be a boilerplate stump speech. But moments before, Kennedy was given the news that no one in the crowd knew. MLK was dead. Kennedy climbed up onto the back of a flatbed truck and, wearing an overcoat that belonged to his brother, JFK, delivered what many historians consider to be one of the most important speeches he ever gave. He said, "Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. We can do well in this country. We've had difficult times in the past, and we will have difficult times in the future. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness. And it's not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of people in this country want to live together, want to improve the quality of our life, and want justice for all human beings." Isn't that what Easter is all about? Didn't Jesus, too, dedicate his life to love and to justice between his fellow human beings? Didn't he die in the cause of that effort? So the question remains for us followers. Are we going to let it end with, "And they fled in fear and said nothing to anyone"? Or are we going to take action? Are we going to sit back and smugly congratulate ourselves on being affiliated with some spectacular wingding event that happened 2,000 years ago? Or are we going to ask ourselves if there's something of Jesus' presence alive in us here and now? Author L.R. Nost didn't write this about Easter, but I think it says what needs to be said. "Do not be dismayed by the brokenness of the world. All things break, and all things can be mended, not with time, as they say, but with intention. So go, love intentionally, extravagantly, unconditionally. The broken world waits in darkness for the light that is you." That says it, doesn't it? The broken world waits in darkness for the light that is you. As our unfinished cliffhanger Mark passage suggests today, are you going to jump up and finish the work that Jesus started or not? So maybe the question to ask this Easter isn't, do you believe in the resurrection, but when fear is being used to manipulate people, will you speak up? When religion is being used to exclude and harm people, will you take a stand? when bombs are being dropped on innocent people? Will you care? Because Mark's gospel ends with frightened people saying nothing to anyone. And the only important question left is whether we are going to repeat that ending or use the best of who we are to write a different one. Once upon a time, there was a kind of Rip Van Winkle angel who had nodded off to sleep just about the same time Jesus went to earth. After 30 years asleep, the angel bolted awake, startled by all the hubbub surrounding Jesus, returned to heaven. The angel asked Jesus, "Where you been?" Jesus said, "I went down to earth." The angel asked, "How'd it go?" Jesus said, "They crucified me." And the angel said, "Well, you must have had a wide influence." And Jesus said, "There were 11 people in my parish." Concerned, the angel asked, "What will become of your work?" And Jesus said, "I left it in the hands of my friends." The angel asked, "And if they fail?" And Jesus said, "I have no other plans." Friends, Easter is not about what happened to Jesus. Easter is about what happens to us. So let's get to work. Jesus has no other plans. Happy Easter. Hey, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.